Good morning.
Good morning.
So delighted to be with you today. Let me just start with a quick story. I was at the post office the other day. And I was waiting in line, and no one would come to the counter where I was. And I waited for a long time. Finally, I could see just a glimpse. There was a postal worker in the back, and he was chipping balls. So, I think I found your wedge. You're really Santa Barbara. Of course, I made that up, but most of what I'll say today will be the truth. But I couldn't resist. Humor is a way to open our hearts, is it not? Some people actually think it's sacrilegious to laugh in a spiritual community, you know, that somehow we're not supposed to be joyous. And I think every spiritual master that I've ever heard of has ever expressed the true connection with the divine has been in a state of bliss and joy and laughter. And I just find that a beautiful way for us to sort of open our hearts. And I don't think jokes are such a good idea, but I think humor is good when it's natural and it arises. Notwithstanding the one I just told you. But you laughed anyway, so that's good. I love the name of this group, this gathering, and the fact that it's lived over this many years really speaks to that there's something essentially being met here in your hearts, in your spiritual needs, that you've created this on your own, that it didn't come out of organized religion, that it was an authentic, organic emerging of what you knew you needed in your spiritual life. I think this is the way, the authentic way of spirituality today. That organized religion plays a very lovely role in transmitting the ancient teachings and the scriptures and the doctrine that it has been, that withstood the test of time. But you and I ultimately have to own our own truth, don't we? We have to know in our own hearts this connection. We have to know what is true for us. And we have to know sometimes what are the conditions under which that authentic spirituality can emerge and be nurtured and be grown. So I love that this happened here. This happened as a result of you taking ownership of your spirituality and just not relying on the structures and the institutions of religion, which oftentimes are not consistent with our own inklings around what God is, what spirituality is, what the divine is, and how that can be made alive in us. Yes? We understand that. So I honor that, and I think the words, the title, Word and Life, it brought to mind to me this morning when I was thinking about this idea that word, another word for word might be wisdom. Yes? That you're seeking the world traditions, wherever tradition that you're seeking wisdom. And that wisdom then has to be brought into your life, right? That it has to be made real. When I started a spiritual community in Davis, we pioneered it about 10 years ago and was there for 6 years. I did a meditation and was trying to understand what is this spiritual community about? What is the message of this community? How will it be unique? And what came to me in this meditation was the slogan or the words, embracing the human, expressing the spirit. Embracing the human, expressing the spirit. In other words, we have to be present to the life that we have. We have to be present to this human life. And as much as we would like to have this exalted, transcendent, you know, heavenly experience, and maybe some of us would even like to be in the spirit realm instead of here on earth where it can be challenging, we have to meet life right where it is in order for us to have the spiritual experience. It's paradoxical. And on the way to this divine reality, we have to embrace the moment. We have to embrace the life that we have in this incarnation, in this mortal, fathom-long body. This is the life we are here to live. And what I realize is the more I can embrace life as it is, as it's showing up, the more I am able then to dissolve whatever barriers there might be to the realization of the greater truth of my being, or the greater truth of God or Spirit. That it's paradoxical. We think that our humanness is what gets in the way of spiritual realization, but it's really our resistance to our humanness that gets in the way of our spiritual realization. So I'm going off rails already, as you can tell here. I have not even touched the book yet. This is the book we're doing. We're going to get there shortly. I just wanted to, I think, bring segue and bring appreciation for the group, how it arose, and then my own resonance with this idea of word and life. Of yes, the wisdom teachings, yes, the truth, yes, the ideal reality, and yet being right here present with it in this lifetime and walking the walk of this life. So that's part of, I guess, my credo or philosophy of life, and it's worked well in for me and for people who have walked this walk with me in different communities that I've been a part of. I will have a drink. This is vodka, I understand. Oh, it's weak, though. It's very weak. It's not a neat drink. Okay, so eager to love, the alternative way, Francis of Assisi. Many of you may know Richard Rohr. He's well known. He's written, I think he writes a book every month or something. He's amazingly prolific. I've been trying to write a book for 25 years. I've got the outline of a few chapters, so I don't know how he does this. He's obviously very well connected to the proliferation of ideas and putting them down on paper. Either that or he's got some amazing, what do you call people who write for you? Ghostwriters, yes. Holy ghostwriters, no doubt. Yeah. But Richard is, he's just a brilliant man, and he has this capacity to give honor his tradition, which is he's a Franciscan priest, to honor his tradition and yet throw a very wide embracing net to all the traditions insofar as how it aligns with the authentic spiritual life. And I think that's, again, that meets very well with what I think you are about here too. It's not you abandon your tradition in order to be open-minded. You allow your tradition to be your anchor or your touchstone, and that which continues to offer you support and offer you inspiration. But then there's this part of us that says, what else could be included in this spiritual life that comes from other traditions or comes from other awarenesses or people who have sort of broken through to the awareness of the divine? And how is that articulated, and how might that serve me on my spiritual walk as well? So that's very much what Richard is all about. And of course, choosing to write a book about St. Francis of Assisi is probably a no-brainer, considering this is, you know, St. Francis was obviously who started the Franciscan way, the Franciscan order, which was back in, some of you may not have been around, as I recall, it was the 13th century. So Richard says very clearly in here, this is not a biography. There's been some great biographies written. I mean, there's been more written about St. Francis. He's probably the most beloved of all saints. You know, we know about him as the patron saint of the animals and the environment and all those good things. And he says, this is not a biography. What he wanted to really illuminate, I think, is the Franciscan way, which is the way of life, the philosophy. And I'll get into some of that in a minute. If I go, I probably will go under the time that we have, and then we may take some questions in this part of it, if that's okay. We'll just see how it goes. Sometimes I run off the mouth and time goes away, but I really want to make sure we have plenty of time to have dialogue. I think that'll be rich for us today. Okay, St. Francis. He was a 13th century Italian Catholic friar and a preacher. He founded the Men's Order of Friars Minor, the Women's Order of St. Clair. Clair is also part of this book. He talks about her teachings. And the Third Order of St. Francis for Men and Women. He was proclaimed a saint by Pope Gregory IX, and he's known as the patron saint of animals and the environment, which I said already. Many of you, do you all know that the current Pope how he got his name? It was his choice. It was his choice. The current Pope Francis, when you are made the Pope, you get to choose your papal name, and he chose Francis. And he has great similarities with the Franciscan way, with the egalitarian notion, the humility, the care about social issues and equality. He's quite different from some of the previous popes, yes? Do we know this? Yes. And for some people, that's amazingly welcome news, and for other people, they're like, I'm not so sure. So anyway, but that's the connection right down to this current day with St. Francis. So I'm supposed to be covering the preface and the first chapter. The preface is entitled Something Old and Something New. Let me read a quote from that, which says it pretty well. St. Francis of Assisi was a master of making room for the new and letting go of that which was tired or empty. That sounds so refreshing, doesn't it? Some of us have experienced things that are tired and empty. We really admire people that let go of what's tired and empty. And that was his genius. As his first biographer said about him, he was always new, always fresh, always beginning again. Much of his genius was that he was ready for absolute newness from God, and therefore could also trust fresh and new attitudes in himself. His God was not tired, and so he was never tired. His God was not old, so Francis remained forever young. So something that just really characterizes, I think, excitement in spirituality is when we are open to something new. We are open to insight. Not the well-worn scriptures and the doctrines and the dogmas. If those are not alive in us today, then they're not going to have the effect on us that they're intended. One of the things that I find in my work is that I've been doing this for 18 years, and every Sunday I have to get up and give a message. And the work that I do, since I've been doing this for so long, I don't have to do a lot of study. But I really have to find myself reignited by the profundity of these teachings and truth. And I don't think that's just for preachers. I think that's for all of us. Is that if we find words that light us up, if we find words that come across us like with a wave of love or a wave of awe or wonder or gratitude, or whatever, those kind of qualities are things that we need to keep harvesting every day, not just going through, you know, what so often happens in spiritual practice. It becomes rote for us, yes? Whether it's prayers that we say over and over again. You know, Jesus had a lot to say about that. You know, he wasn't too fond of the Pharisees who made a big show of their prayers, you know, and basically didn't have any heart. It was about whether they were saying them right, and it was all about form, and it wasn't about content. It wasn't about heart. I think this is what I get from Saint Francis, is that he was always waiting and is always willing to have a new insight, to have a fresh word from God, and I think that to me that just speaks so powerfully of how we stay inspired, how we stay awake spiritually. Yes. Is that we're listening with new ears every day, that our heart is open for the truth to be heard in a precious present moment refreshment, because that's the juice that we need to be inspired and to move forward with our life and to move through difficulties, is when we understand that this God or this spirit or this great spirit or whatever, however we envision the divine, is alive and well in us. And it's not just a notion that someone said in a scripture somewhere or it's part of an ancient doctrine or promise, but that we sense it in ourselves. And we'll talk about that more as we talk about mysticism. So, new ways of expression was key for him, but he never lost sight of this one spiritual insight. So the content, you don't lose track of what you know that you know that you know, even though you're open to new ways of expressing it or hearing it in a new way. If you've always found your holy moments have always been in a temple or in a church, and one day you go out into nature and you have this sense of awe and wonder, you know, now you're opening up your spiritual eyes in order to recognize the divine in a new way. Not that the divine has changed or your sense of that one presence, one power, higher power. It's that now you experience it in a new way. It's like now you have new avenues of inspiration. Does this make sense? That's what I think what St. Francis was inviting us to do, and that's what the Franciscan way is. It is about being open and not stuck into the ruts and the old dogma and the old ways of doing it. Not that there isn't a place for tradition. I think there is. But only if that tradition serves your inspiration, not just dutiful adherence to something which is, what were the words? Empty and tired. How excited are we with that when we're empty and tired? Yes. That's usually when your spouse wants to go somewhere and you don't, and you say, you know, I just feel empty and tired right now. I would not be an inspiring person to be around. Could I just stay home? There's an empty and tired TV show on right now. And I think I'm the perfect match for it. I'm staying home. So that's the preface. He just talks about something old, something new. And he talks about doorways to the divine, which I've alluded to, you know, different ways of experiencing the divine. And when it gets right down to it, the Franciscan way, and this is a touchstone to all of you, most likely, and it is nothing more than the gospel itself distilled in a very distilled and honest form. So, you know, it's taking the gospel, but making it more honest, making it less of a pontification of some ideas that sound lofty and ideal and inaccessible, and making it real. And that's why, you know, in with the animals and under the earth and seeing beauty and wonder wherever you go is the Franciscan way. It's still, you know, Jesus' references to the mustard seed and to the pearl of great price and all of these things. But then we get to realize that Jesus was trying not to fool us or to try to speak over our head, but to use familiar metaphors, familiar references and symbology of experiences that we have. You know, lots of references to nature, because we encounter nature all the time. We don't always encounter the transcendent all the time. But Jesus said, in so many words, that this is the doorway to the divine. These references to the ordinary, the mustard seed, you know, the faith of a mustard seed, if you have this, you know, it will become a great thing. Just like the mustard seed grows into a great plant. So doorways to the divine in the Franciscan approach are very simple and humble. And it's therefore very accessible for the average person. Of course, we know Jesus wasn't teaching to people who were necessarily highly educated. Those people didn't get it. And seemed like they were the more critical of the simple, honest teachings of Jesus. Yeah, that's what I said right there. Let me read an excerpt. I have some markers in my book. It looks like I've done my homework, so I want to read them. Excuse me. I want to illustrate, he says, what Francis clearly changed and did differently, and what flowed from his unique wholeness. We will see that Francis was at once a very traditional and an entirely new in the ways of holiness, and he is still such a standing paradox. Let's see. Tom, I'm getting a little ring. Do you think we could maybe bring it down just a bit? Do you hear that ring? No one's hearing the ring besides me. Okay, well, there you go. All those rock concerts I went to, just... check, check, check. Check, check. You hear it now? No, I think we got it. Thank you. Didn't hear it before either, but... We will see that Francis was at once very traditional and entirely new in the ways of holiness, and he is still such a standing paradox. He stood barefoot on the earth, and he had touched the heavens. He was grounded in the church, and yet instinctively moved toward the cosmos. He lived happily inside the visible, and yet both suffered and rejoiced in what others thought was invisible. Again and again, he was totally at home in two worlds at the same time, and thus he made them into one world. You hear this? When you're at home in both worlds, in the mundane and the spiritual or the sacred, when you're at home in that, there is no separation anymore. Wherever you are, God is. The divine is. He, like all saints, delighted in both his absolute littleness and his absolute connection in the very same moment. Of course, they totally depend on one another. He and Claire, I love this line, died into the life that they loved. Died into the life that they loved. Instead of living in fear of any death that could end their life, they were both so very eager to love, the title of the book. And they somehow knew that dying to the old and the unneeded was an essential part of living this love at any depth. Yes? Do we know this? Most of us do not seem to know this, and we resist the change. I used to give a talk, and it was my favorite talk title. It was, "Give me the growth, keep the change." We all want to transform. We want growth. Yes, let me have that growth. And he goes, "Well, it will involve change." "Oh, well, now, not so much. Now, I'll stay steady." We're interesting creatures because they're, you know, you and I are. We have this pull to whether we want to call it evolution of consciousness, whether you want to call it the spiritual impulse, whether you want to call it the pull of the Creator that's trying to pull us from this less than whole experience of being a person into greater wholeness, whatever, by whatever name you call it, there is an impulse for us to grow. Yes? Don't we know this? And oftentimes it shows up for us in some kind of discontent. That's kind of how it started for me. My spiritual journey started with a lot of, I'm not happy. I don't like this life, and nothing looked good, and nothing tasted good. And I knew that everywhere I looked in my life, it felt like everything was out of sync, you know. And I felt like I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. There was supposed to be more juice in life than this. You know, that was my sort of prodigal son experience. And that's a very long story, so I will not tell you that today. But what I realized after I sort of cleared the cobwebs away from this discontent was that there was a realization that it was this part of me, this spiritual part of me, or this heart, in my case, had been ignored. That I was living my life from outside in. You know this one? Thinking that if I could get the landscape to look better, you know, then I would be a happy camper. You know, like one of those proud suburban homeowners who prides himself, of course this is anathema to the water crisis, but prides himself on the greenest lawn, you know, in the neighborhood. And I was one of those, you know, and thinking that if I just had the perfect lawn, you know what I mean? Every year, springtime would come and these little dandelions would pop up, you know, and I'd swear that I got every one of the last of those little buggers a year before, and this spring, here they came. And then I realized that one fall or whatever time of year, you get those little cotton balls, the neighbor kids would come over and go, you know, spreading the seeds. It never can get perfect, can it? And I think that's oftentimes what brings us to the spiritual life, is sort of we come to the end of this journey of seeking, but not finding. In the world. And I don't know how I got off on this topic, but I'm sure it's an important one because it's coming through. But this idea, this pull to spirituality, to a recognition that there's something more for us is innate in each one of us. And it's important that we find ways to nurture it. And this is a perfect example of what you're doing here. Is you're creating a venue by which that impulse to grow, to know more about the higher teachings, the higher truth, can be introduced to a number of ways of realizing it, yes? So that's that. Mysticism. Let's go on to mysticism. Basically the same thing. We have one more quote here before I leave the preface, which is really quite lovely. This idea, that's where I wanted to go with it. The dying into your life, the life that you must learn to love. And he says, as the book progresses, you will see that how first learning to love your life and then allowing yourself to fully die into it and never to die away from it. Once death is joyfully incorporated into life, you are already in heaven. Huh? And there is no possibility or fear of hell. That's the Franciscan way. The gospel is not a fire insurance policy for the next world, but a life assurance policy for this world. Don't you love that? Yeah. The gospel is not a fire insurance policy for the next world, but a life insurance policy for this world. Of course, that's the Franciscan understanding. Certainly not the universal understanding of what the gospel is for, but this is what we're working with here. This notion of death or dying before you die, which is he's referencing, we see this in a lot of other traditions. The Tibetans really get this in a very strong way. There's a book called The Book of Living and Dying, and there's this idea that the reason that we don't really live is because we live under this mantle of fear. The only reason you and I don't live full out, full expression, living the life of our dreams and our passions and having, fully expressing ourselves in our relationships and all this, is not because that's not possible for us, but it's because of the fears that we have. And so this idea of dying is not, of course, the physical death necessarily, although guess what? No one gets out of here alive, so we know that's coming for all of us as well. But it's dying to those things which really would be the obstructions to life, the obstructions to a greater life, and the obstructions to a life of greater love. There can be no greater love than the love of God, which is available to all of us and to me. And yet what I have to do is I have to find out what's blocking me from experiencing this love. And oftentimes I think it's because the way she's talking to me and the way she's treating me, you understand? Or the way he is, that I'm not feeling this love. And boy, if that doesn't die, how well are we doing with our relationships? How many relationship seminars do we go to over and over again? And I'll say the same thing. We're hoping I'll say, well, Larry, we've looked at your relationship and with your partner. And normally we say that you have to do your own work. But in this case, we're going to say that your wife really is the problem. We're waiting for that seminar. When is it going to come? There's got to be one out there somewhere. But I haven't found it yet. It's always the same thing. It's like, what is getting in the way of you opening your heart? What's the story that we make up, right? And none of it's based on the truth. It's all based upon the story. She said this. That means she must not love me if she said that. That's story. And my wife and I are involved in doing this process called the B-Peace process and nonviolent communication. You may have heard of some of these things. And it all has to do with having empathy and insight, right? So learning to have better loving relationships has nothing to do with the other person, other than the fact that you learn about empathy, which means what might that other person be feeling right now that gave rise to that reaction, and insight into your own experience to see what's coming up. This is the evolved path to better relationships. And again, it's the inside-out approach. We would love to change people so that we would have better relationships. Yes? Yeah. Tell the truth, yeah? Honesty. I mean, we would love people to change. But the problem with it is they're not all going to be the same anyway. So, you know, this notion that we just keep coming up against the same problem over and over again, and we somehow recognize or we don't recognize that the only common denominator in every relationship challenge you've ever had is what? Just me. I've been the one. So that's why spiritual work, you know, is not about getting more of God's attention, right? Because you can't have any more attention than what we believe and what the book speaks as the presence of God in every moment. So if we're not experiencing that, then there's something that needs to break down in us. Something needs to die in us so that this love can be born or this greater love can be realized. This is the oh so painful but oh so liberating truth, those of you that know have been down this path, is that it's a recognition that the work is inside of us. God's work is done. God isn't going to get any more loving, but we can open our hearts and then experience more of God's love. Yes. Challenging stuff. All right, so how are we doing on time? It's not 11 yet. You just chase me away when it's time to go? Yeah?
10 minutes.
10 minutes go. Okay. Well, 10 minutes to talk about mysticism, not a problem. Everyone close your eyes. Let's do this. The book, you know, does great justice to this. And this is not a book report or a book review in any way. So you will be reading this chapter. So what Richard Rohr says, that mysticism, in his understanding, is experiential knowledge of spiritual things. Nice, compact little definition. Experiential knowledge of spiritual things, right? As distinguished from book knowledge, right? Secondhand knowledge, or even church knowledge. And you know, we're all very familiar that organized religion, for the most part, has discouraged us from having mystical experiences, or for trusting the inner authority, you might say, the inner recognition of the divine. A lot of organized religion, not all of them, but many of them have. And they've wanted us to rely on the external authority, which is the church, its doctrine, the dogma, the creeds, and the scriptures. Francis says very clearly that you must have an experience of the divine. And I was thinking of a metaphor, which I've used before, and how important mysticism is in the spiritual life. It's very much like if I were to describe to you a Fuji apple, and I gave you exactly what it looked like, and its color, and its shape, and its size. And I would just describe to you what it tasted like. Well, it's sort of sweet, and it's kind of tart, and kind of crunchy. And that's the external, right? And you now know everything there is you need to know about Fuji Apple, right? Or on the other hand, I could just give you one, and you could bite into it. And then I would say, now do you know what a Fuji Apple really is? What it tastes like. And I think that might be, you know, the simplest way to understand mysticism is that we must meet our source, our God, our creator, at the place where we can experience its presence in us. And I call that the opening of the heart. It doesn't matter how much you study and how intellectually, you know, you can get all these spiritual concepts. You can know everything there is to know about love, you know, or about grace, or about forgiveness, or about transcendence, or about inclusivity, or about harmony, or about wholeness. Oh, yes, I've read all the books. I know all about those things. But it's another thing when you forgive somebody, or somebody forgives you, and you feel this rush of love. You feel this grace. You feel this wash, that where peace comes over your body. Yes, this is what we're here. This is what we're here to do. We're here to experience the fruits of the Spirit right here in this fathom-long vessel. And every moment can be a doorway into that possibility, yes? Every moment. It doesn't have to be when you're in a temple. It doesn't have to be when you're even on your knees or you're sitting on your meditation cushion. It can be every moment is to ask, let me see this as it is. Let me know the grace of God right here, right now. Let me see beyond the appearances, as Jesus said. You know, do not judge by appearances, but by righteous judgment. Let me know the love that is without condition for myself and for my brother, for my sister. These are invitations into mysticism. Mysticism otherwise just remains, again, a description of a spiritual practice. We have to practice the practice. We have to abide in the presence of God. And I'm not saying this in a preachy way. I'm saying this from my own experience. Because I can get very mental, can you? And talk and talk and talk all day about spirituality. And have debates and very, you know, cogent perspectives that can be exchanged. You know, and you see this in some traditions. They just argue. And somehow maybe comes from that some insight and some awakening, which is wonderful. But if it doesn't open the heart, page 8 it says, I must know that I am, at least in part, the very thing that I am seeking. Hear that. I must know that I am, at least in part, the very thing that I am seeking. If we're seeking the divine, if we're seeking God, if we're seeking love, we must know that it is part of us. Otherwise, we wouldn't seek it. Our seeking is a homecoming. You know, to really a home that we never left. You know, our urge towards wholeness is because we already have this inherent wholeness in us that we have forgotten. You know, we were made in the image and likeness, right? Of God, of love, of peace, of joy. And this urge to experience that is a call back to that part of us that never really lost it. It's just been occluded. It's been covered over by mental thought, by story, by feeling of separate from God and love in each other, yes? And so this urge to wholeness is only to reclaim this part of us that has been lost. But not lost permanently, only lost to the conscious awareness, but still deeply present in our soul, in our heart. And this is the mystical path, is to touch that again and not find that it's out there, but find that it's inside. Yes? Good for now? Okay, good. Thank you. Good. All right, let me go real quick.